with episode 569 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and always be careful what you wish for.
That's right, and well, all I can say here is you should be very upfront and honest about your intentions, because if you're not, it can really backfire on you. And also, a message from Castiel. He was not happy about Bronze Thumb's thoughts on last episode of Supernatural, and so he was removed from this episode so that he can be properly chastised. Anyway, before we go any further here, Edmund, I believe you have a disclaimer to give?
Certainly. As ever, we will discuss whatever we feel like that might have come up in these episodes. So if you haven't seen them, you're quite likely to be spoiled. But we always try and wait a week or 10 days, especially once we get to the end of the week like this, to make sure you've caught up.
That's right. And we are going to go ahead and start off real quick here with... a show that was almost in the top three, but didn't quite get there.
Wow.
And that would be Grimm, Season 4, Episode 20, You Don't Know Jack. A string of homicides create a fear that a Jack the Ripper copycat has arrived in Portland. As Nick and Hank investigate, they must also respond to an unexpected situation. At the same time, Adeline and Rosalie must work together on a last-ditch attempt to fix Juliet's condition, and Juliet decides to keep her new ally, even if it means hurting those around her. All right, well... this came in at an 8.5, the best that an episode of Grimm has been at in a long time.
Yeah.
Now, Gary gave it a 9. He said he's actually concerned about Adeline. He loves this anti-Grimm kind of vibe with Juliet and burning the trailer and all of that. Yeah, no kidding. It's getting very interesting with all of that. Juliet is turning out to be quite the villain here. And one that I put down that you're learning to hate an awful lot. Because Juliet was not a character that a whole lot of people liked at anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So make her really evil. And people are just waiting for her to get her cup up and says the case may be. So yes, this came in at an 8.5. Definitely a jump up from recent weeks where it was barely average.
Yeah, so. I've got to admit, as someone who didn't follow this show past the first season, but have been interested hearing you guys talk about it, that's quite an interesting character arc that they've put Juliet on. And since I know there was always that issue about at the beginning of her being on the outside and them needing to bring her in, but to wind up not just bringing her in, but then completely flipping her is quite interesting.
Yeah, and if this season can actually go out on a high note, it could bounce back completely from that skid late in the season and wind up matching or exceeding last season's high mark for the series.
Wow.
Yes, it is only 0.04 of a point right now below last season's average, which was its best season to date for us anyway. So nice bounce back. Especially if they do something really nasty to Juliet. No, I'm just kidding. Reform her. No, really. Edmund, if you don't mind taking the next one.
Certainly, and this would be Game of Thrones, Season 5, Episode 4, The Sons of the Harpy. Jaime and Bronn sneak into Dorne by sea, but their arrival isn't the secret they'd hoped it would be. Meanwhile, Sansa discusses her future with Littlefinger, Jon is tempted by Melisandre, and Tyrion has a new traveling companion on his way to Meereen.
Yes. Isn't that so nice?
Yes.
All right, and this episode came in at an average of, load up, 8.5. So again, just outside of the top three. And I got to say, I'm really surprised that we're this far into the season and we haven't seen Game of Thrones in the top three.
Yeah.
That kind of shows you how disparate some of the comments and the opinions have been. But just to go ahead before we get into some specifics, Flacco Jones over at VogNetwork.com said, definitely more happening now, while still more of the same getting players into position. Yes, welcome to books 4 and 5.
Yes.
Now there's an opening at Danny's side. Can Jorah get back in that way? Also, was it hard for me to tell? But it was hard for him to tell. But did Grey Worm die too? Way to jump through the end, but that's okay. I did the same thing in my review.
Yep.
Looking forward to finding out next week. And can Tyrion meet Danny by then, please? We all feel that way.
Yes, we felt that way through most of book 5.
Now, Gary says, love the shakeup from the book storyline. Sansa has come a far way from that timid little girl. Love how the captain did reveal Jaime's presence. So there's a lot of plot threads here, but I guess we can take them one at a time. Let's start with the one that is kind of the biggest change from the books over in Meereen, and that would be the Sons of the Harpy basically staging this massive attack or counterattack or whatever you want to call it. It's not a coup so much.
Yeah,
as an attack on Dany's people and Ser Barristan.
Yes.
Rest in peace.
Indeed.
that's a bit of a change, and I can see how that would shock a lot of people. But the way that I kind of framed it with some folks when we were talking about it was that this was taking a lot of little things that happened over like half of a book and condensing it into one major event. So that this should propel her storyline to the next phase much quicker.
Absolutely. Yeah, because I think that's some of the frustration for when you're reading the books is the fact that it was such a slow drip of opposition and covert resistance and just sort of the forces chipping away at her over time, which was could get a little tedious, let's just put it that way, at times. shaking things up like this, I also like the sort of flip after all of those weddings and receptions and things the book readers had to we're keeping mum about early on, that now the producers are getting to have their own back in a little way and say, yeah, all that stuff about how we're gonna do things differently, yeah, well, guess what? Now we can surprise the book readers too.
That's right. I mean, and that's really the main thing. I think that every episode this season, each has been another step towards either progressing towards where the books are at or completely changing things up, so that really each episode there's more and more confusion on the part of everyone.
Yes.
As to where this is going. And I actually think that's amazing. I was thinking about this the other day, that last year at Dragon Con, I was on a Game of Thrones panel, as I mentioned back then. And we had to have that warning. The books are the books. The show is the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I was saying, if I go back this year and I do that panel, there's going to be no need for that disclaimer.
Yes.
Because it won't matter. There's nothing in the books that's going to be beyond where the show is at this rate.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And the show is going to be so distinctly different. It's like, this is really a game-changing season. And I think that's a really important thing to keep in mind, especially as we move on then to Littlefinger and the whole thing with Sansa. Now, first of all, I almost feel like I need to go over to my to my review. It's actually that confusing, but I'll kind of jump a little bit in my thought process here. Littlefinger, my question that I have at this point is his explanation that he gives for his motivations, is that really his motivation? Because that's something we don't know in the book at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you've basically got this very general idea that he's trying to set up the North for some reason. But if this is really about securing the North so that he can be aligned with Stannis, that's a big reveal.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really like, well, I don't know. Like, to your point, is that where the book was going? I don't know now. This is exciting. What are your thoughts? Do you think that he was being honest with Sansa, or do you think he was still playing games? Because it seems like whenever Sansa's in a scene with him, he just becomes Mr. Exposition and starts just laying it all out there.
I mean, with Littlefinger, I always feel like I have to take it with a some grains of salt, but certainly given the relationship with Sansa and with Caitlin, it is getting to the point where it's like, I'm down to just a couple of grains of salt when he's talking to her. To a certain extent, as conniving as he's been, that love for Caitlin is so much at the root of his being that I could see it coming around to him wanting to protect her, protect her legacy and her family that way.
Mm. Yeah, I mean that's the thing, is that going back to last season, Littlefinger, whenever it's just him and Sansa, it's like he wants to impress her with how clever he is.
Yes,
and I think I've even speculated before that Sansa is waiting for him to tell her enough for her to turn it around on him, and I feel like this is almost maybe that far. Because now he's going to King's Landing. Why? This is a bad idea. Really bad idea, Littlefinger. Like, what are you thinking, Peter? Do you happen to notice that, like, completely random? Let's just have this backstory about Rhaegar and Lyanna. Just saying. Can't possibly be important, right?
No. Just an old family tale, yeah.
So speaking of King's Landing and why you never want to go there right now, Cersei needs to read a little bit of recent history here in the U.S. Like around, you know, 1980s. Just thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you were ever tempted to mix politics and organized fundamentalist religion, don't. Ever. Cersei's learning this the hard way.
Yes.
Although she doesn't seem to care, but everybody else is finding out that this is bad. And when the king basically walks up to, you know, the fortress of Baelor and says, I want you to let this person go. And they basically go, who do you think you are?
Yeah. Not a good sign.
No. So this is the other thing. Like, Cersei is basically like grasping at power by any means necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what I don't get. Like, Peter is so clued in on the rest of what's going on in the game. How does he not know that this is the absolute wrong time? Because Cersei's, like, getting rid of anyone that she perceives as a threat. Does he think that she's going to forget that he was involved with Sansa, one of the supposed co-conspirators that killed her son?
Mm-hmm.
This could go very badly for him.
Yes.
But anyway. We'll see where that all goes because, clearly there are some changes since Sansa's not supposed to be in Winterfell right now. So, what do you think of what's going on here in King's Landing?
That's certainly been my impression is that this is, as you say, Cersei just grasping at straws and just highlighting turmoil, but it's more how much free fall the Lannisters are basically in with Tywin gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know what Cersei thinks she's accomplishing here, but it's not going to end well. That's for sure. Now going up to the wall, we have Stannis, who apparently Peter thinks is going to be coming along to liberate Winterfell sometime soon. And Stannis seems to be planning for that. Mm-hmm. He's also... I was kind of curious, you know, that all lines up. And then in the meantime, he's telling stories to his daughter about, you know, the Stone Men and the ruins of old Valyria. And I was like, okay, is that going to be a thing? Because you're kind of skipping some other stuff that was aligned with that. So, mm-hmm. I don't know. Weird. And then there's Melisandre.
Yes.
As I put in my review, John may know nothing, but he certainly gained enough wisdom to realize when Melisandre is giving him something with strings attached.
Yes. Yes, John may have been a little cavalier about some of those oaths earlier on in his career, but he's learning to stand his ground.
Yeah, although he still isn't quite learning political savvy.
Well, no.
Because his responses could have been just a little more nuanced, yeah. But perhaps he was distracted. There were a couple things mm-hmm. kind of on his mind.
Yes.
You know, naked gingers, they have a tendency to get under his skin. Beyond that, we have this whole thing of, you know, Jaime and Bronn and Dorne and the Sand Snakes, and it's kind of nice to see them. But what did you think of the Sand Snakes?
Actually, if anything, I think that's one of the elements they haven't done as good a job of really giving us the background we need, and unless they're sort of deliberately doing it trying to keep them more mysterious. I think in terms of some of the earlier those initial Dorne scenes, I just feel like there could have been a little more background and development given to us before we actually met them.
Yeah, I feel like they're kind of rushing them in
mm-hmm.
without as much background as they really need. They're kind of arch right now compared to what we are used to. They're just like, we want to kill some Lannisters. Okay.
Yes.
Join the club.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond that, what are your motivations? Who knows?
Yeah. Because I think it's not just with the Sand Stakes in general, but kind of with Dorne as a whole, where they haven't really set up sort of just how different Dorne is from the rest of Westeros in terms of the you know, not just the different climate, but the sort of the different cultures and attitudes. You know, obviously Oberyn introduced it to a certain extent, you know, this may just be a case of me complaining because they haven't really gotten into things yet. And as Jamie and Bronn's wonderful adventure continues, I may just be reacting to something where they are putting more of the detail in the latter part of the story. And so, at least I hope so. That's what I'm keeping my fingers crossed for.
Yep. I think that just about wraps that. Anything else that you can think of regarding this episode of Game of Thrones? I mean, at least some things happened.
Yes, absolutely. I definitely got after having to do all their little setups, as everybody got flung asunder at the end of last season, now it feels like as it usually does each season, they're ready to really start getting underway. And certainly some of these shifts they've made, I'm quite looking forward now. Not just the fact that it's opening the story up to go in directions that we can't anticipate, but it really does feel like they're taking some of the things that might have been slightly problematic about the books and improving on them. So I'm very interested to see where they take that.
Mm-hmm. Let's see here. So moving on to the next one, if you don't mind taking this as well.
Sure. This is Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Season 2, Episode 20, Scars. Skye feels conflicted about whether to side with S.H.I.E.L.D. or the Inhumans as the two groups grow further apart. Meanwhile, Agent Coulson shares a secret he's kept from everyone.
Yes, indeed. And this came in at an average of 8.4, so well above average here. And we have everybody gave it an 8.5 except for Bronstom.
Mm-hmm.
Castiel will be mad about that too.
Yes, indeed.
Gary said basically the ending caught me off guard, and he's still enjoying Coulson's assumption of power. Yes, that ending kind of kicked it up by half a point right there.
Oh, yeah.
But I got to say, it's like this was the episode where, if I was just grading this on how much I hated what some of the characters were doing, oh, this would have gone badly.
Yeah.
It's consistent. So, mm-hmm. Okay, I get it. And that final twist, that really kicked this one up. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, I really don't have much to add. But in general, I mean, I think after these different groups and conflicts that have been introduced, I think in both areas I've enjoyed the way they've been playing it out, particularly on the Coulson and Rodriguez and S.H.I.E.L.D. real S.H.I.E.L.D. front. I think the way they've played it out, I'm trying to come up with a word other than consistent, but that's one that keeps popping into my head. They just have kept it very consistent with the way the characters have been set up, and it's just sort of cruising along nicely towards the finale, basically.
Yeah, I guess the big thing for me was May. I think I would have given this a 9 if it wasn't for the fact that I felt like May's turnabout on Coulson was a little fast. Yes, they have set it up to this point so that it is consistent, but I still feel like the intensity of her feeling like she has been betrayed and her actions accordingly is a little bit much for me. How about you?
No, I mean, for me, I mean, given what they've revealed about her character and what she's been through, it worked for me.
Okay, I mean, fair enough. We'll see how it all plays out in the finale.
Yes.
I was saying a couple episodes ago, I suspect that they were setting up for Mockingbird and Hunter to move on, which is why it's a subplot in this episode, and looks like it'll continue to be a bit of a side plot in the finale, but I can imagine that it would be just as easy to have them go off to do something and then come back in right at the beginning of next season.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so hopefully they don't set it up. Like they don't set something up as like, we'll never see them again.
Yes.
It's like, just kidding. They're here for lunch. But yeah. So, moving on from there, we have another big show that was hitting it out of the park this week. And that was The Flash, Season 1, Episode 21, Grodd Lives. Dr. Wells unleashes Grodd on the city to distract Barry and his team, who are dealing with Reverse Flash's latest threat. Joe, Barry, and Cisco pursue Grodd into the sewers, but the gorilla kidnaps Joe. And really, you're going to leave out one of the biggest things of the episode? Anyway, it came out to an average of 8.38. So yes, just a hair below Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and just a bit below the top three. These shows we just have been describing here have all been within spitting distance of the top three. And Henry loved this episode. Gary surprisingly did not leave us any notes or a score on this episode. I would think The Flash would have been a priority for him.
Yeah.
But I liked it. I gave it an 8, despite the fact that I really don't care for Grodd. And I wanted to run over Iris with a semi. She was just pissing me off throughout the entire episode with being so stubborn and about being angry with Barry. But anyway, what did you take away from this episode?
I guess I'm sort of more indifferent on Grodd, other than it's one of those cases where he's, you know, my biggest issue is that he's just a little too obviously CGI for it to for me to really suspend my disbelief. Certainly in terms of the tactics of Wells releasing him as the distraction, actually I did really like, certainly a case of setting stuff up from earlier in the season and having it pay off suitably satisfying manner. I think the Iris issue is apparently just going to remain at least throughout the first season, and we can hope that the production team and writer's room looks at some of the reactions in the off season, and maybe they will try and figure this out and work it out somehow.
Yes, we shall see. She seemed to be getting a little less annoying by the end of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. All right, well, let's take the next one, Edmund.
Absolutely. This is Elementary, Season 3, Episode 22, The Best Way Out is Always Through. Holmes and Watson embark on an interstate search for an escaped convict who may have murdered a judge. Meanwhile, Bell's new relationship hits a rough patch when Sherlock applies his deductive reasoning to it. Yes, indeed. And me and Gary did catch this one. We gave it an 8.25. Gary coming in slightly higher than me, an 8.5, saying the mystery of the week was novel and timely. Again, the B-plot shined for me when Sherlock pointed out the flaws of his lifestyle to Detective Bell. And my reaction was rather similar, it was the B-story, the character stuff with Sherlock and Bell that was what was the fun stuff. I'm not sure I would call the mystery of the week novel, but it was still a cut above some of their more procedural shows. So yeah, a good solid outing for Elementary.
Mm-hmm. And let's see, as far as the next one here goes, we have The Good Wife, Season 6, Episode 21, Don't Fail. Alicia recalls her earlier days as a lawyer when former client calls her after being charged with a murder that is tied to a case from 2009. And it looks like Henry and Nadim have struck an accord about the future of the show, because they both came in around the same thing, and so the average is 8.25. So there you go.
Okay.
Next up is Bitten, Season 2, Episode 4, Dead Meat. Elena finds herself the subject of painful tests in an off-the-grid compound run by a maniacal and powerful cult leader. Back at Stonehaven, the witches resort to dark magic in hopes of locating their missing members. Yes, things are very dark this season on Bitten, and I'm enjoying the hell out of it. I gave it an 8. And basically, I summed it up to say, werewolves on the order of being human, meet witches on the order of Salem. Hilarity ensues. Yeah, so I know that this is like, you know, getting a little too far into it, but one of the interesting things about this universe that was in the first season is that the werewolves have traditionally been male, and Elena is the only female werewolf that has been around in a very long time.
Right. I do remember that from the few episodes I caught
this
season.
Now the kind of, you know, what would be the word, the reverse of this is true for the witches, where traditionally they are female. And the big bad, at least, that they are dealing with here is a male witch. That is something that they haven't dealt with in a long time. And it is only because it is something on that order that they are that it has kind of spilled out into other, types of supernatural associations. Because normally the witches and werewolves would never know about each other, because they particularly, the witches make a point of not to get involved with anybody else. So much as the werewolves have their nice little pack, and everything about it is staying, making sure no one knows that they exist. So it's like, funny, hey, wait, you exist? Yeah, we exist. You exist? Yeah, huh? But yes, it is definitely a little bit, if you took the over-the-top elements of Salem and just went with the dark overtones, that's kind of the witches of Salem, of Bitten.
Okay.
So it's not at all bad. If you don't mind taking the next one here.
Certainly. That is Mad Men, Season 7, Episode 12, Lost Horizon. Don receives a reward for his work. Joan butts heads with a coworker on an account. Roger dodges a big decision.
Yeah, and this came in at an average of 8. 8s across the board. 8, 8, 8, 8, 8. Gary said, I shouldn't like this episode as much as I did given how bad things came for most of our staff, but it shows their weaknesses as much as the previous episode showed their strengths. Good point. I said, good episode, but damn, was that stuff with Joan hard to watch. Yes. Oh, that doesn't even begin to cover it. What do you think of all that?
It was very hard to watch, and it's the last few episodes. It looks like I will be continuing on my my early postmortem. It's one of those things where I understand it was completely appropriate to the era. This was happening all the time, but there was that hope for me that in this show, showing these strong women, you were going to see them at some points actually being able to battle against it somewhat, since that was something that was starting to happen right around now. But unfortunately, that is apparently not going to be the case.
Yeah, it's just really hard to. to watch. That's just, the unfortunate side of it. And what's strange to me is that you get to the end of the episode and she made such a, I think she saw the writing on the wall going into this, but she put her best foot down and had to, it's a metaphor for even today where she had to accept 50 cents to the dollar of what was really owed to her.
Yeah.
Just to maintain her dignity. And it was just, you just wanted to reach through the screen and throttle some people. But at the end of the day, if she kept fighting, she would have had nothing. So yeah. I kind of got Roger's point. It's like, what are you going to do?
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, you're right, but you're not going to win. So go out with something versus nothing.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you've got, Peggy basically walking around like, I don't give a whatever, especially at the end, her walking down the hall.
Yes.
Was just, I don't even know what.
With the painting. Yes.
Yes. There was, it doesn't quite rise to this occasion, but there was like a Hunter Thompson type of visual thing going on there. I don't know, but, it's kind of ironic to think that Joan, having reached such heights, is going to have to leave with, a concession, while Peggy is, we still don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But she seems like she's got a much greater chance of moving forward with her own career just by being willing to wait things out. I don't know. She's got a little bit of an odd character arc the last few episodes. But what else? I mean, that and the bizarre stuff going on at the old office. I don't even know what was that. Roger and Peggy on the skates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this was a case of sort of life imitating art, or vice versa. I definitely got a sense of that being one of those sequences where it was as much the actors getting to have a little fun as the old office wound down, which just happened to mesh perfectly with where their characters were at.
I suppose so. And Don.
And Don. On the road, what? Don. Yeah.
What was that all about? I don't even know how to interpret it.
I think we have to wait till next week to find out.
Oh, that's the way to dodge it there. Yeah. I'm not even talking to you. I'm talking about Matt Wiener anyway.
Yes, I know.
Yeah, I don't know. See, the thing is that they're kind of coming to these points that I can see being relatively good or understandable endings for various characters.
Mm-hmm.
And we're getting there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. So, I mean, it's we are getting there. Just one more episode before the season finale.
Yes. So, yeah, there's not a whole lot of time for them to play games here.
Mm-hmm.
They got to get down to the brass tacks of what's going on with Don.
Yeah.
And I feel like, I mean, it makes sense that it's not going to come until the very end.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, but
we should know, have some clue, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, what fascinates me, though, is that sort of as we get closer and, as things, to my mind, I mean, especially with this whole, from the first season, we've had them trying to, fend off McCann. But winding up at the end with them having been absorbed, with three episodes to go, and the ending apparently being the shakeout from that. I don't think anybody expected this, and I think certainly in terms of a lot of the speculations or presumptions people made about they'll wind up starting a new, or Don and Peggy are going to start a new agency, or he's going to the opening credits are just are the finale, and he's just going to jump off the balcony. It's like, now they've been absorbed by McCann. He's sold the penthouse with the balcony. So I do kind of feel like the show is deliberately trying to put us in a place where we really have no idea. So.
Yeah, it's a really good way to describe it, because that's exactly how I feel. Anywho, let's go ahead and move on to another show that came in at an average of 8, and that is Salem, Season 2, Episode 5, The Wine Dark Sea. Mary comes face-to-face with her tormentor, Countess Marlborg.
Yes, she does.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and what are your thoughts on this one?
This was a conflict that they've been building to, and I thought it came off quite well. Or at least obviously, sort of the start of presumably their continuous fencing with each other. After the setups of the earlier episodes, not that they felt like setups necessarily, but of getting all the new players introduced and now starting to bring them together in certainly feels like it's going to be very interesting conflicts.
Mm. Yes. So, yeah, I mean, lots of moving parts here with the different characters and Anne and John Alden and all of that going on at the same time. It's Mary and her nemesis are going to be only one layer to of this, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
So let's see. And I just have to say, poor George becoming a water feature.
Yes.
Never a good fit. The original Season 2, Episode 21, Fire with Fire. Klaus vows revenge when he learns he's been betrayed by his own siblings. Elijah, Rebecca, and Freya try to take down Talia. Haley tries to escape through the flooded bayou. Davina considers an offer that would bring back Cole. And Marcel faces a new threat. As is typical for this show, an 8 with death and destruction galore. And next we have Edmund, if you don't mind.
Certainly. This is Turn, Season 2, Episode 5, Sealed Fate. Abe makes a last-ditch effort to recruit a spy inside New York. Meanwhile, Ben must determine which of two deserters is a double agent.
Mm-hmm. And let's see. This came in at an average of 8. And what would you have to say particularly about this episode?
I enjoyed it. I liked the whole back and forth with his potential recruit. I liked the way they had built that up over a couple of episodes. And certainly the little twist of the father's involvement. I thought that was quite interestingly done. And then we got to that ending. What did you think of that?
I'm not sure where they're going with that. because I didn't think that they'd pull any type of trigger on that character at all yet. So for there to be something going on with Andre is going to be... Yeah, I'm not sure where they're going with it. It kind of threw me off completely. Do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of why I was kicking it to you, because nice. I'm not sure myself. Although certainly, it made perfect sense that in terms of Andre having that background that's not quite so favorable and gives him that chip on the shoulder. Certainly meshed with everything we've seen of him so far. So. Yeah, it got him kind of like we were saying with Mad Men. It's out there, and have to see where it goes.
Well, at least it's still mid-season.
Yeah,
for Turn, it's not the last couple episodes of the entire series.
Yes, that's true.
I do have to say that I know that they've put more emphasis on Washington because of the slight revamp of the show.
Right.
But that all said, I did enjoy the scenes around the intrigue of his struggles in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. The Return, Season 1, Episode 9. Helen. Someone unexpectedly shows up and puts Chloe in danger. Peter makes a startling announcement, and Helen puts her deadly plan for the town in motion.
Ah, there it goes. Okay.
Were you waiting for that?
Yes.
Okay.
Or some sort of reference in that vein. Yes.
Yes, and as I put here, as I scored it at an 8, something needs to be done about Victor. Really, really soon.
Yeah.
Like, really soon. Because that kid is way out of control.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so I'm guessing they are still spooling out the original storyline, and by the end of these 10 episodes, it should be exactly where the end of the original 8 episodes were.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, so perfectly fine. Excellent.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was my thing last episode when there wasn't any mention of something being put in motion. It was like,
yeah.
Okay, no, you're definitely not stretching beyond the 8.
Yes, a certain Peter Gabriel song comes to mind. Anyhow, next one, Edmund, if you don't mind.
Certainly. This is iZombie, Season 1, Episode 8, Dead Air. Liv and Clive investigate the murder of a morning radio talk show host, there we go, who specialized in relationship straight talk. After Liv consumes the victim's brains, she gains insight but gets very personal with Clive, which makes him uneasy. Meanwhile, Peyton steps in to help Major, and Blaine issues a warning.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so this episode came in at, I believe this is a high mark for the series, but it came in at an 8, with three of us hitting it there. Yes?
Yes.
And I'll just... The last 5 minutes of this episode took what was a perfectly fine episode anyway and just made the entire series come together.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like if I was somewhat ambivalent to the show, like kind of happy that the show was renewed initially, I was like, oh, good. You know, that show got renewed. It kind of deserved more time. Then I saw this episode, got to the end, and went, thank God this got renewed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, kind of all of those background elements just, as you said,
yeah.
coming together. And yes, it's now starting to feel like a cohesive show rather than, a procedural show that has these other elements that we sometimes pay attention to. But no, not the case here.
I'm really glad that it is happening because I actually now care about all these different plots.
Right.
Where before I didn't. And the fact that her boss got bit blew me away. I mean, yeah, spoilers. Ha ha. Yes. We gave you the warning. Too bad. Yep. That was something I didn't see coming at all.
No.
But it's like you said, everybody now is getting in kind of interwoven into their various storylines in some way, shape, or form. And that even major stuff is really making sense now. So we'll see how that goes along. But that show has definitely, that might be the highest. Let me see. I'm just going to, as I'm curious here. But yeah, I think that this is the highest scored show that we've had. Maybe, yes, it is. Yeah. So there we go. It definitely, well, it's got 5 more episodes this season, and I hope that it continues on this path.
Yes.
Anyhow, the next one here is Powers, Season 1, Episode 9, Level 13. And as usual, we don't have a recap for that one, but this is the penultimate episode of the season. Gary gave it a 9, an 8, excuse me. And he said, loved the ambiguity of Christian's motives. Nice twist with Level 13. Wolf is free. And he went, crap.
Yes.
Which is, for Gary, going pretty far.
Yes, it is.
And collectively, this got a score of 7.67, so above average, which is pretty good for Powers. Yeah, Edmund, what were your thoughts on this episode?
Yeah, it certainly. I mean, it's. I'm realizing as we're discussing it, I think this is a case where it's. There's certainly decent performances. There's some interesting ideas. And I think back at the beginning of the week, you were talking about Powers and hoping it gets more of a budget. Because I really feel that's more of what's holding it back is just it, in terms of the whole look and feel and the amount of money they're allowed to spend on it. It just has that sense of being a show that, you know, sort of just scraping by budget wise and it, you know, and I really feel like now, you know, okay guys, you've managed to get a this first season in. Now that it's been renewed, you know, let's, you know, maybe, you know, whichever way you do it, being more creative or you know, or getting more budget, let's, you know, just ramp things up a little bit.
Yeah, you know, that this is going to be a show that actually winds up having a pretty good average for the entire season. I mean, at this point, that even if it bombs the finale, it's not going to go that low. And what surprises me is again, this is a great example of if you have a good story and fairly good characters, a little dodgy acting here, you know, is going to take a little bit off the top maybe, but it'll shine through even when the budget isn't quite there. But like you said, this could have been a real revelation of a series for the first one out of the gate for PlayStation Network. If they had thrown enough money behind it, but they almost tried to do too much with too little.
Yeah.
I think they scaled the show for the budget and sometimes you could tell.
Yeah.
And that's what held it back. But you almost felt like, man, if you had a little more money, you could have done it this way.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have been that much better. But it's one of those things where it's like, I'm looking at the scores and I'm going, this didn't do badly.
No.
The series is actually done better than some of the shows that we expect better of. So, yeah, it's definitely one of those things where I feel like we're going to come out of it going, man, if they would have only maybe thrown twice as much money at it, what could they have done? You know, that would have made it an amazing show. It was good as it is, though. So there we are. Just another example of sometimes it's just making sure everything comes together. Let's see. What's the next one here?
Speaking of things that may or may not be coming together.
Yes, Lost Girl, Season 5, Episode 3, Big in Japan. Lauren deals with threats against her life. At the same time, Bo and Tasman protect a Japanese warrior with a hit on his head. This one came in at an average of 7.5. And, yeah, Edmund, what are your thoughts on this one?
Well, this, I mean, obviously this show was the shakeout from the big opener, the two-parter and of course, having to adjust to Kenzie's departure. This was a case of, it winds up at a 7.5, but really on the strength of the final 5 or 10 minutes or so, which was when I kind of felt like they were getting, you know, getting back to what, you know, whatever the dynamics for this final season team is, that they're just in terms of the plot and the characters, they're all trying to deal with the new situation with Kenzie gone, and it really took to the end of the episode before I felt like they were starting to get a handle on that, and meanwhile they're running around with the Japanese guy and doing Fey things which were kind of generic, and yes, we've been there before, but as ever with this show, it's when they get back to the characters and getting that team dynamic working that the show works at its best.
Mm. Yeah, I get the feeling here that we are dealing with, I don't know if Ksenia Solo had to go for the, you know, for various reasons, if it was she wanted to go and do turn, I don't know. But in her absence, I feel like they are revamping the relationship between Bo, Tamsin, and Lauren to really play up that whole, you know, bisexual thing a lot more. And this is a big part of adjusting to that. Number one, I think they've really kind of glammed up Tamsin a little bit this season, which was probably why the first appearance of her in the first episode was kind of like, wait, that's her? Yes. What's going on? Yeah. I don't mind. Believe me, she's gorgeous and all, but it's like, man, for two seasons, she didn't really...
Well, for two seasons, she's been the tomboy.
Yeah, now you're kind of making her a little more, you know, conventionally attractive. It's like, okay, that's all good, but very dissonant. But I do feel like there's a certain rapport there that works fine. It's just like you said, they needed an episode that wasn't the premiere and wasn't doing this big thing to kind of get their feet wet on the new dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
And now that seems to be working better. It's still not hitting, you know, this all cylinders, but 7.5 for Lost Girl is not terrible.
No.
It's if I go back and take a look, I mean, that's pretty much in line with what the show has always been. So there you go.
Yeah.
It's kind of, yeah, this is what we expect of Lost Girl, and this is what they're delivering. Can't get too upset by that. The Vampire Diaries, Season 6, Episode 20, I'd Leave My Happy Home to You. Catch up computer. There you go. Alaric and Joe reluctantly participate in their bachelor and bachelorette parties. Oh, that'll never go well in this town. Meanwhile, Elena turns to Bonnie and Joe for advice over Damon's impulsive offer. Enzo asks Stefan to help Lily, who is on a dangerous downward spiral, and Matt gets fed up with the supernatural threats that plague the town and takes his frustration out on Tyler. As you can probably imagine, those parties did not go well at all. People died. This is the way things work in Mystic Falls. And after this, there are only two episodes left with Elena and Nina Dobrev on the show, and I'm still not quite sure how that's going to work, except for, oops, she's human now. So that'll make it easier to kill her off if that's what they're going to do. Let's see how that works out. And finally, we have Dig, Season 1, Episode 9, Jehoshaphat. Okay. An ancient religious sect is ready to enact its plan. Peter partners with unlikely allies. Lynn realizes the depth of the conspiracy while investigating Riddell. Gullen tries to crack more clues from the Donaldson case. And Avram moves to protect his valuable asset. And this came in at a 7.5. Largely, it would have been at least a point lower than it was if it wasn't for that final twist at the very end, which I don't know if you saw this episode.
Yes, as the disclaimer guy, I will now invoke my trump card to say I'm a little behind. Don't tell me.
Okay, yeah, I'm not going to say. But I will wrap it up to say, with one episode left of the season, I still don't know where they think they're going with this.
Welcome to Tim Kring World.
Yes, that's exactly right. But it's interesting to see that our quote-unquote middle shows came anywhere from 7.5 to 8.5, so above average across the board.
Yes.
So it was a good week.
Absolutely.
Very good week. And next week we have, as I go now to switch gears and look at that, we have a few shows that ended this week. So we are going to be basically a couple shows shy and down to, I think we're down to 22 episodes next week, I think.
Okay.
If it lets me look at it. 21 shows next week. Although Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. will be a two-hour episode.
So oh, yes.
That makes up, that's the 22 I was thinking of. However, next week we also have another handful of season finales. So it's that time of year.
Yes.
Any last thoughts on this week, Edmund?
Um, Well, it's been nice to see that as we're moving into the finale run, that it seems that on most cases our shows are hitting their stride, and even with some of the ones in the middle, especially that big series finale coming up, they are at least keeping me intrigued about just what are you going to do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's definitely a potential that a show that has been a long time moving towards its finale, that once was the cultural touchstone for some people, I'm really kind of concerned that it's going to land with a massive thud.
Mm-hmm. Of course, given where the executive producer previously worked, that might not, perhaps shouldn't be such a surprise.
I wasn't going there.
Just don't stop believing, John.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google+, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as Fair Use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.